welcome to another dimension. A dimension of insight. A dimension of understanding. You are entering a place where reality collides with truth. There are no limits. There are no boundaries. This is All Planet Radio.
Welcome once again to another installment of Off Planet Radio. This is also going to be heard on the Threshing Floor Radio Show as well. I'm Randy Moggins, and the next hour will be very interesting. It may be a little dark at times, but hold on, because there's light at the other end of the tunnel. My guest has been featured on numerous national TV networks, including, help me out here, Bill, where is your story aired at?
Discovery Channel, Sci-Fi Channel, Coast to Coast AM, and many other major shows and radio and TV shows. And I've been written about in 5 books and several magazines and newspapers, and I've given over 700 media interviews.
Wow. So the voice you hear there is my guest. His name is Bill Bean, and the book is called Dark Force, and the story is true, frighteningly true, and it is the beginning of a 10-year period of his life, which begins, I believe, in 1970. The story of some events that, you know, hopefully none of you have ever encountered, but I think it is a glimpse and a view into the dark side of spirituality and what happens when we come to a truth about who really rules the cosmos. Bill, kind of begin framing this a little bit. Give us a timeline for this and the story behind how your family came to move to this particular location.
Yeah, and first of all, Randy, I want to thank you for having me on. It's an honor and a pleasure to be on with you. And, you know, the story really begins, you know, I say in Dark Force, my first book is called Dark Force, my second book is called Delivered. In Dark Force, I say that the story began in 1970 when my family and I moved into a 3-bedroom ranch-style home located in Glen Burnie, Maryland, in a community called Herondale. You know, I say it began there, but in all honesty, after writing Dark Force, I was provided and given additional information, which led me to the conclusion that, you know, supernatural paranormal events were taking place long before we moved in to that house in Glen Burnie.
Now, do you mean with that particular location or in your own family life?
In my family, yeah. Okay. I'd found out that my mom had supernatural experiences in her childhood, and it goes even further back than that. I found out that someone on my mother's side of the family did something to open the doorway and conjure.
That's interesting because a lot of times what we find is generational aspects to things like this.
Absolutely.
It's very similar to the ET abduction phenomena as well. We continue to find generations.
It's all tied together.
It is absolutely all tied together, and we're going to go there. Yes.
Absolutely.
So I'm somewhat familiar with the area that you lived in at that time. I live very close to Maryland, and I've been through that area before. It sounds like a suburban setting. It doesn't sound like the Amityville horror at all.
Yeah, it's the community is called Herondale. It's a very small community located inside of Glen Burnie, Maryland. And for such a small community, back in those times, I don't know what it's like now because I haven't been back there, but back in those times, very, very high crime rate, very high rate of violent crime, murders, high rates of domestic violence, just a very, very abnormal rate of violent crimes for such a small area. And I certainly believe that I know why, and I have a good inclination as to why. I think that the evil forces that were conjured up way, way back on my mother's side of the family certainly stayed with the family, and I think that evil force actually guided my family and I to that house where evil was already manifest. And I believe that area is evil absolute. And so I've often said that my family and I were caught in the middle of a 2-pronged attack from evil. That's why it was so severe for us. And these events began as noises and feelings of presence, and it gradually escalated into violent physical attacks on us by these demonic entities. And I had found from my childhood, I was given some old family photographs. When my mother passed, my sister was in possession of these photographs, and several years ago, she had given some of these photographs to me, and I looked through the photos, and I found some very disturbing, anomalous images in some of the photographs, and in one of the photos taken in 1968, it was taken of my sister, and I was 2 at the time, and she was 11, and it's a photo taken of us at Christmas time, 68, we're seated behind a toy piano, and to my sister's far left is a very large, tall, hooded being wearing a black hooded cloak. The thing looked to be 7 feet tall, and certainly no one in our family was 7 feet tall, and they wouldn't be walking around wearing a black cloak, hooded cloak. And so then there was another photo taken of me the next year in 1969, a photo supposedly taken of a 3-year-old boy, which had other types of beings in the photograph, and many, and on and on and on. I mean, many, many bizarre, supernatural, anomalous images have been taken of me and my family, and I have taken, in my adult years, you know, since 1995, I have taken probably hundreds, if not thousands, of just absolutely bizarre photographs.
Yeah, and, you know, that's interesting. And I was going to ask you about that because I looked at the photographs that you sent me, and some of them are dated, I believe, even up to, like, what, 2003, 2008?
Yeah, 2008, that's correct, yeah.
So
this was going on until 2008.
This has been, even in your adult life, you've sort of had this phenomena around you.
Absolutely, yeah, I've, you know, a plethora. If I were to list every event that's happened to me in the course of my lifetime, you'd be doing quite a lengthy series on me. It's just amazing.
Well, and we'll cover what we cover in this show. Like I said, I definitely want to have you back. You began as a what would seemingly be a normal family in pursuit of the American dream, buying a house, and your father fixing it up. He was a contractor. Is that correct?
That is correct. My father, William Sr., was a very good man, hardworking family man, and he was a contractor, a master carpenter. My mother, Patricia Bean, was a homemaker, a very good woman, and by all accounts, they were happy in their marriage. They were married in 1957, and I were 56, and my sister was born in 57. I wasn't born until 66, but something happened in 63. And again, this is 7 years before we moved into the house. My mother, and I'm still not clear on these circumstances to this day because most of my family is gone now. Neither of my parents lived to see the age of 50. But my mother gave birth, and no one would give me any clarity on this. In 1963,
mm-hmm.
I heard varying accounts from different family members. But the bottom line is that Johns Hopkins was called in to remove the remains of the little boy, I guess, or whatever, for studies. And this occurred in 1963. I never could get clarity on it as to what happened, why it happened, and why Johns Hopkins would come and remove the remains for studies.
So this was by your estimate, an anomalous birth of some sort.
Absolutely. It's just, yeah, it makes no sense. Why would, you know, a renowned medical facility come and do something like this? I mean, it makes no sense to me whatsoever. And I never could get, you know, the clear, true story on what exactly took place there. But I know for sure something, you know, something very bizarre took place because my sister, now that would have been my mother's firstborn son. And interestingly enough, my sister would have given birth to a son, but that fetus died inside of her. Now, this was after we moved out of the house. This was probably around 1980, somewhere in that time frame. So it was probably just after moving out of the house. But my sister's firstborn son also died and died inside of her. My sister nearly died with that fetus
mm-hmm.
because it poisoned her. So, I mean, you know, we've had, I've lost most of my family to some of the most bizarre, untimely circumstances. You know, my mother died at the age of 44 from a cerebral hemorrhage, and my father was shot to death at the age of 48.
Wow.
And just, I could go on and on and on about, you know, just losing family member after family member. And I have no doubt that these demonic forces greatly contributed to at least two of those deaths, which would have been the death of my beloved grandmother, Dora Harvey, who died from a sudden series of heart attacks. And then 2 months and 2 days later, my beloved mother, Patricia Bean, died at the age of 44 from a cerebral hemorrhage. So, you know, again, I could go on and on and on. But back to the house, when we moved into the house, my mother was the first to have an experience in there, and it occurred 2 days or a couple days after moving in. It happened while she was unpacking boxes in the living room, and she felt a presence, and she really, in her mind, thought that it was my dad sneaking back into the house to play a joke on her. He had that type of sense of humor, and she spun around fully anticipating to see him, and she was hoping to startle him first, and to her shock and surprise, you know, no one was there. So, as you can imagine, she was taken aback by this and startled and disoriented, but was eventually able to collect herself and go back to doing what she was doing. You know, my dad had taken us, I have an older sister and a younger brother, he had taken us with him to his parents' house for the day to allow my mother to unpack and organize by herself in peace. And so she was by herself in the house at the time when this took place. And she was eventually able to go back, collect herself, and go back to doing what she was doing. And then one of the bedroom doors slammed shut by itself, and that was enough to make her go outside and wait until we got back. So that's how it began, you know, these feelings of presence, these subtle noises, and then very loud noises with doors slamming. And it gradually escalated into violent physical attacks on us by these entities.
Who was the first person in your family to experience what you would call a physical attack?
That would have been my sister. And the way this house was laid out is the house is located at the bottom, dead end bottom of a cul-de-sac. And behind the house is a very long and deep ravine. And you would enter in through the front door into the living room, and the house had a very ominous look and feel about it from the outside as well as the inside. The house had very, very dark brown paneling on the walls. It looked almost black, and so the house was very, very dark, even in the daytime, not much light in that house. So you would enter in through the front door in the living room, and you would make a right off the living room down a long hallway, and the hallway had two bedrooms on the right side and the bathroom and bedroom on the left side. And my brother and I shared the first room on the right, and then my parents' room. And then across the hall in the room we called the back bedroom was my sister's room. And I believe that room was the portal for whatever was taking place there, because that room was always cold. I mean, even on a 90 degree day, that room remained cold. And that is also the room where the door would open and slam for many repetitions at a time, and did so for many years while we stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister was the first to have a physical encounter, and it happened in that room late one night in late 1970. She was asleep in her bed, and suddenly she was awakened from a sound sleep by something that she couldn't see. And she got frightened because she felt that someone or something was there, but she couldn't see anything. And she got up to go and get my parents. And when she started to do that, something actually grabbed her leg. And thank God that she was able to let out a scream. And that alerted my parents and woke them up. And they ran into the room, turned the light on. They did find marks, red marks, on my sister's leg where she said something had grabbed her. So that's where it began. And my sister never felt comfortable again after that night. And she would eventually run away in the middle of the night and get married to a young man in the neighborhood just to get out of that house. She stated a haunting episode that she would have married anyone just to get out of there, that she never again felt comfortable in the house and felt like she was being watched and followed all the time.
Take us through maybe a thumbnail progression of how this occupation, this ungodly force in your house, eventually just whittled away at your entire family. And I know this isn't pleasant to talk about, but I know you've done it many times.
Yeah, well, after my sister left, the family really was coming under strain then, and my father, who I saw as a heroic individual and heroic figure, I very much wanted to be like him. He was blessed with every attribute in life, every ingredient to be a success in life, and he really should have been. He should have flourished, and his story alone is very sad and tragic, but he began to really change. His character began to change, and he went from someone that I saw as a hero in a very short time to someone that, I'm sorry to say, I absolutely hated him. I loathed him. I couldn't look at him anymore. And praise God, I was able to forgive him before his death in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, I very much hated him because he went from this good family man to a raging alcoholic in a very short amount of time. And I felt that he was under demonic attack. They were focused on him. He did admit to my mother's mother that he was seeing apparitions in the house. And there's no doubt that he was under attack. And so he turned to drinking to try and escape this reality. And unfortunately, he began to physically abuse my mother on a regular basis between 1973 and 1975, nearly killing her on several occasions. And I have no doubt, based on what I witnessed, I can recall being 8 years old, having to run and call the police on my father because he was killing my mother. And I have no doubt, based on what I witnessed, that these demonic forces were able to actually manipulate him, enter into him, control him, and just pile his rage on, towards my mother, just fuel his rage. And he ended up leaving us in 1975. Thank God, because had he not left, I'm firmly convinced that he would have killed my mother.
Mm-hmm. So some of the events that played out in that time, you yourself were also physically accosted by an entity as well.
Yeah, many times over the years. And just a very horrible, traumatic experience. The first time it happened to me was in 1971. I was 5 years old, and very much like my sister, I was asleep in my bed. My brother and I shared the first room on the right. His bed was closest to the window. Mine was closest to the door. And middle of the night, I'm asleep in my bed. Something wakes me from my sleep. I can't see anything. I know something or someone is there. I got frightened. I was getting out of bed to go and get my parents, and as I did that, a tremendous force grabbed me by my shoulders and slammed me back on the bed and pinned me to the bed. And I can't in words describe how terrified I was and the trauma, the amount of trauma that I suffered from that first moment. And then, like I said, it happened many times again after that. But it's unfathomable that a five-year-old should endure and have to endure such trauma as that, because many horrible things happened during that experience. It seemed like it lasted for hours. I'm sure it only lasted for minutes, but it was horrible. I mean, it was truly horrible. I felt like my ears were engulfed by a tremendous ringing and buzzing. Just imagine being at a very loud rock concert or something and mm-hmm. how your ears would ring and buzz. Mm-hmm. I had that. I felt like I was on a merry-go-round in slow motion, very dizzy. A ring, what I call a ring of fire, was probably more like a ring of neon, came down, and nothing worked on my body. The only thing that moved on my body were my eyes.
Right.
I couldn't. I desperately wanted to scream out for my parents, and I couldn't. My mouth wouldn't even work. And I saw something come out of the ceiling and rotate around my face. Came very close to my face and rotated counterclockwise and then went back into the ceiling. And I call it a ring of fire, but it actually looked more like a ring of neon light. And many other things happened during the course of that. Like I said, it happened many times over the years.
And that's what I wanted to ask you. That particular event, and again, my background and my research is in what is called ET abduction. And when I read this particular part of your book, and I just read it a few days ago, my jaw dropped because everything that you named there is symptomatic as well of what would be called a classic abduction scenario, including the so-called sleep paralysis, something that's very typically reported by abductees. And the fact that you had an apparition in the ceiling of the room, my question is, did you have those occurrences on a regular basis?
I did, many times over the years, and, you know, it's amazing as well, and I'm not sure if you saw this photo or not. For anyone who wants to see some of these photos, they can visit www.billbean.net and click on Supernatural Photos, and you'll see what we're discussing here.
Yeah, we'll absolutely link to your site, and I may even throw a few of these photos up as well, because they're quite jaw-dropping.
And the one was taken in 1975 in that house of my mother. And, you know, you've touched on this subject. And in this photograph, it's very, very clear that my mother is on the telephone. She's standing behind a bar that my dad had created in the house. And to her left was like an oval mirror. And behind her was a very long and large rectangular mirror. And standing, the first thing is standing beside her, I would say probably is a little over 3 feet tall, is what appears to be one of these gray-looking alien beings.
I'm looking at it right now. Yes, it's very, very reminiscent of
flash of the camera coming off the head, and then you see in the mirror this gigantically large alien-looking face right in the mirror. It's unmistakable. So my mom used to comment about she would be doing dishes in the evenings, and we had the kitchen window face that ravine, and she often would comment about blue lights descending down in that ravine. So, you know, there is a correlation, there is a connection, and I believe the whole thing is connected, and I also believe that we can conquer this garbage, and I'm a walking miracle. I'm a living example and a walking miracle from God that I've overcome all of this. I have no fear whatsoever. I place all my faith and trust in God. His name is Yahweh. And I give it all to Him. And that's the only way for me, because otherwise, I don't know where I will be. I'm sure we wouldn't be having this interview, and I probably wouldn't even be on this earth.
You mentioned in the that particular dream episode, we'll call it that. We both know it wasn't a dream. You mentioned the appearance of another being a feminine appearance.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Randy, I think I was so traumatized. I mean, I felt at that time when these things began to happen, I was so terrified. I'm 5 years old. I felt like I was going to die. I felt like my heart was literally going to jump out of my body. I can't, again, describe in words the level of sheer terror and trauma I was feeling at that time. And I think that I was so frightened and traumatized that something took the shape and form of what I thought to be, and still may be. I'm not totally sure on it, but it is possible that it was some sort of angel, a divine experience, because this being manifested at the foot of my bed, and I felt so much love and comfort from this being. And it was a female, and she had long blonde hair, and she was wearing like a shimmering kind of gown, like a bluish white gown, pale or very pale blue. And I began to calm down, and all the horrible things that were happening to me suddenly stopped with the manifestation and appearance of this entity. And the most incredible thing is that this divine being looked exactly like my mother, exactly like her.
It tells us in the scriptures in the New Testament that we sometimes entertain angels unaware, and I'm thinking that many times things appear to us in a form that's comforting to us, and that's perhaps what you saw there.
Absolutely, I believe it, you know, because without the appearance and manifestation of that entity, who knows, I might have just died out of pure fright. I mean, and I don't say that lightly or jokingly or half-heartedly. I mean, I mean it. The level of my trauma was off the charts.
So in the intervening years that went on, your family endured these attacks. And the reasonable question is, given what was going on in that house, in the sense that everyone had it, because it appears as though everyone was aware this was not normal experience, why did the family remain in this particular house?
Well, that's the most frequently asked question. And the reason for it is, again, my dad left us in 75. So when he left, I failed to mention it. My mother was very, very ill the entire time that we lived in the house. She had developed high blood pressure, which led to a series of strokes, which ultimately led to kidney failure. And my mother was very ill, and she couldn't work. And when he left, he wasn't sending any money home. And I'm ashamed to tell you, we had to go on welfare. Mm-hmm. And we were just barely surviving. It was so difficult. And my grandmother, she helped as much as she could. And God bless her. She did the best she could. And God bless my mom. She did the best that she could as well. Under the circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she was very, very ill. And so what had happened is my dad wasn't sending money home, and we ended up losing the house. And the man that bought the house in the public auction was aware of my mother's situation and circumstances, and he let us stay there on a pay-as-you-can, when-you-can basis. And my mother's mother wanted us to come stay with her, but she and my step-grandfather had a one-bedroom apartment. My mother was not going to be a burden on her. And my mother's sister wanted us to come stay with her, but she had 8 children and a husband. And again, my mother was not going to be a burden to anyone. And to be even more frank, as time went on, I feel that each and every one of us came under demonic oppression at different times in the house. And I thought and felt very strongly that at some point my mother didn't want to leave anymore.
Isn't it interesting how that particular circumstance enabled you to stay in the house against all odds? When I read that in the book, I smiled, but it was a smile that went, this is the kind of thing that makes you say,
Exactly. I think they were trying to finish us off.
Absolutely. Let's take a break here, and we're going to come back on the other side. We're going to wrap up this story and talk a little bit more about Bill's work in later years and some of the details behind the kind of events that we're talking about. We'll do that after we come back on the other side. This is Off Planet Radio and The Threshing Floor. I'm Randy Moggins. We'll be right back.
That's right.
There are no limits.
There are no boundaries.
This is Off Planet Radio.
Welcome back to The Other Side. We are talking to Bill Bean, and we are talking about his book, Dark Force. And Bill, you have another book as well, and that one I'm not familiar with. That's called Redeemed, is that correct?
Delivered.
Delivered.
It's all Delivered, and, you know, again, it talks about how God has worked miracles for me in my life. I mean, I've just, he had a plan for me. There's no question, Randy. I believe he had a plan for me, you know, from probably my birth, and I think that the enemy has tried to stop me from doing what I'm doing now, and that is spreading good news that people can become free from this garbage. We just have to take our power back and not give our power away, and you know, we just have to trust. There's two things that we really and I'm not going to preach to anybody, you know, I don't judge anyone, I love all people, but for me, there's two things that I do in my life. And my wife as well, we make God number one in our lives, and we give everything to Him. We give Him all the glory and the praise, and we certainly thank Him for the miracles that He's worked for us over the course of our lives. And two, we love our brother and our neighbor as ourselves, and we try to be good to everybody, and I'll do anything for anyone anytime. And so I live by that. And so for me, I know this is true. I know that what God has done for me, and I'm just so grateful and thankful, and I'm in a position now to where, you know, again, I just took my power back, and it was through God that He delivered me from it, but, you know, I'm on the other side. My life is very, very blessed now, and I'm in a position to help others, and it's a tremendous blessing.
You had somebody in your family who was sort of, I would call them an intercessor, somebody who began to introduce the concept of a God who could save you from these demonic forces. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was my Uncle Clifford, and a very good man. He lives in Florida and lived in Florida back in that time. And he was very aware of the situation. And we had a long talk. I went for a visit in Florida in 1979, and we had a long talk. And it was through that talk that he said that we could take power over this garbage. And that's exactly, I took those words to heart, and little did I know that I would be engaging in spiritual warfare against these entities upon my return home. So, again, I praise God for arming me with that information, and I certainly praise Him now for having me in a position to be a warrior for him and to help others and to help lead others back to Him.
Did you at any time, or the family at any time, more properly, attempt to engage somebody who might have had the ability? It's very common, and, you know, Roman Catholic priests are very well trained in this area, and a lot of times what happens is they'll come in and they'll do an exorcism or attempt to remove an entity from the house. But even some, you know, the most amazing thing to me is that my background is in evangelical Christianity, and I was dismayed at how poorly trained most Christians are in dealing with entities like this, to even the pastors
Absolutely.
Themselves. And I mean no ill by that. It's just that I grew up with this too, and I became a warrior as a result of my own experiences and began to understand that the scripture gave us some very specific things that we could invoke to take authority over these things. And so I'm just wondering, having said that, at any time did you or the family attempt to engage somebody who might have had the ability to help you through this?
Yeah, actually, my mother, she was so proud and private, and she was so embarrassed and ashamed by what was taking place. She did not want us discussing these events with anyone.
Sure.
You know, as children, we missed a lot.
I understand
of time
the veil. Yeah, I understand the veil of silence that goes behind.
Oh yeah,
and things like.
Oh
this.
Yeah,
very well.
And then eventually, my step grandfather, my mother's stepfather, was Catholic. We're not Catholic. He was Catholic, and he contacted one of the priests at his church, and made the priest aware of our situation and circumstances. And the priest came out, and he was involved for the last 16 months that we lived there. And I'm sorry to say that the activity grew even more violent and more intense with his involvement. And it got to the point to where he was bringing mason jars full of holy water to the house. And we had a number that we could call him in the middle of the night if things were, you know, going crazy. And it just increased and it intensified. And it was just horrific. It really was, Randy. I mean, anything from foul odors manifesting out of nowhere to water faucets turning on with such force and pressure that would saturate the bathrooms and the kitchens and TV sets back then. You didn't have remote control. It was a big, heavy
right.
channel selector. And
yep.
We'd have to push the button in on the TV to get it to come on, and something would push that button on it and take and flip that channel selector like nothing. And levitation, couches, you know, sofas and beds levitating. I can recall days, several times, where none of us hardly ever got any sleep in the house. And there were times that my mother would try and lay on the sofa in the daytime and try and take a nap. And something, an unseen force, would just levitate the couch. And she would literally have to jump off a sofa that was a couple feet off the floor and run out of the house to a neighbor's house until we got home from school. I'm also ashamed to tell you, I'm a big, strong man now, but back then I was a very frightened child. And if it were just my mom and I in the house and she had to use the bathroom, I would go sit outside the door and wait for her to come out. That's how bad it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I can also recall times as a child that my dad had built a garage on the far right end of the house, and he put a basketball backboard and rim and net up, and so I would stay out there for hours. I was an athlete. That was my only escape from things, was being an athlete, and I recall being out there for hours just shooting baskets by myself, and then suddenly I would drop the ball because something was there. I couldn't see it, but I knew it was there, and it would literally chase me into the house, and this happened many, many times. And I could go on and on and on and on and on.
What about your younger brother? The impact on him?
You know, it's so sad because he's a good man. I'm very close with both of my siblings. They are good, productive people. They don't share my faith. I pray for them that they will someday,
mm-hmm.
and I love them dearly, but they're still greatly affected by things that happened, and there's a lot of scars there, a lot of scars and trauma. You know, we all felt like we were robbed of our childhoods because we had no normalcy, certainly no family normalcy, you know, nothing, no semblance of a functioning normal family, and, you know, there's still some bitterness and bad feelings, and I hope that one day they can give it all over to God so they can be free from all of it.
When did the family finally leave the house? What brought about that final exit?
Yeah, it was December of 1980. And, you know, again, after 10-plus years of living in that hellhole, we woke up one morning to the smell, a very pungent odor of burning wires. And we had discovered that every single electrical appliance in the house was just fried. And that was finally enough for my mother to whatever hold that they had on her, that was enough for her to say, "That's we got to get out of here because, you know, someone's going to end up dead." And so we left in December of 1980, left most of the decor and a lot of things. We only took our personal items, like clothing and things of that nature, and we left pretty much the rest of it. And we moved in with my mother's boyfriend, and my brother and I thought that we were free from it. We didn't have any problems at his house, and little did we know that my mother had made him to promise not to say anything to us, that she was still having experiences and still being attacked up until the time of her untimely passing.
Your mom, at one point in the narrative of Dark Force, deploys a Ouija board. Talk a little bit about that.
Just, you know, a moment of desperation. You know, it was just so awful that, I mean, there were times that she would try and sit at the dining room table and have a cup of tea just to try and have some peace. And that bedroom door would begin to open and slam for many repetitions, and she would literally have to cuss. She would cuss at the entities, you know, say curse words to get them to stop, and it did stop. But it was just awful. So she was at her wit's end. She didn't know what else to try. So there was a family member that, you know, did these kind of things. And so they had a thing with a Ouija board. And I just believe firmly that those things invite more demonic spirits, and they are just horrible. They're not a game at all. They're very dangerous. And I would just urge people that if you have it, you know, get it out of your house, because it's not a game.
No, not at all. In fact, in this particular case, what you relay in the book is that it actually did begin to communicate.
Yeah.
I experienced this particular thing as well, and it's quite shocking when an entity begins to talk through what you believe is an inanimate object. But in fact, this is exactly what is occurring. Basically, this is channeling.
Absolutely. That's absolutely right, and it is super, super dangerous. And people need to be aware of this, because it could cost one their very life.
So after leaving the house, your mother continued to experience this, but you and your brother did not continue to have experiences?
Correct, in that time period. But as I grew into my adult years, and certainly after the tragic deaths of my mother and grandmother and then my father, I really lived in darkness for a long time. I really didn't care. I just had a black heart. It didn't matter to me whether I lived or died. And I'm just so thankful that, again, God worked a miracle in my life, and I just greatly care about others, and I care about my own life, and I value my own life. I thank God each and every day for the day, Him giving me another day of life. And it's a blessing, it sure is. And we're not promised or guaranteed anything. And that's something we should all keep in mind, that tomorrow might not come. We're not promised tomorrow. So we need to be at our best and do our best today.
What changed in your life, Bill? What changed that you were able to turn that around? When did that happen?
I think it really happened when I met my wife. You know, again, for so many years, I just had a black heart. And just no feeling whatsoever. On the surface, I was kind and courteous to people, but I never let people get too close to me. And, you know, on the inside, I was just dark and empty, and I walked around in pain for a great deal of time. And then I met my wife, and she just showed me how to love again, and how to be loved, and how, you know, family life really works, and things of that nature. So it was just such a blessing when God sent her into my life.
What are you doing today? Now, obviously, you're writing books and you do a considerable amount of public speaking. Is this now kind of your, we'll call it a ministry to the world, to kind of bring out the fact that there's a spiritual power? Tell me a little bit about what you understand in terms of the spiritual aspects of both the dark side and the light side.
Oh, absolutely. You know, this, I believe God called me to do this. And as strange as this may sound, I believe that He allowed me to go through some of those experiences in preparing me for where I'm at this very day. And, you know, I have experienced some of the most terrifying and some of the worst circumstances imaginable. And yet here I am. I'm here to talk about it. And I praise Him for that. And this is certainly a part of a ministry. And, again, I don't condemn anybody. I love people, and I just try to speak truth and teach truth. And, you know, I've written two books, and I've been all over the country giving lectures and making appearances, and it's a blessing. It really is. It's just amazing. I've been contacted by thousands of people from all over the country and even different parts of the world who have been in need, and they're still contacting me. I mean, some of these people are suicidal, so you know, I really have to rely on God to guide me through situations like that as well, because you never want to say anything wrong and cause someone to to take that extra step and end their life. So it's just a wonderful blessing. Each and every day is a wonderful blessing.
Are you able to go inside the churches of this country and give your message at all?
No, not really. I've been rejected by most of them. And, you know, I did go to one church. This was in last December. I was flown to a church in West Harwich, Massachusetts. A Baptist pastor contacted me, and the church was 250 years old, and they were having supernatural demonic problems in the church. He believed that voodoo curses were involved and things of that nature. And he asked, would I come? And I said, I would, and I did. And they flew me in there, and I spent 5 hours engaged in spiritual warfare against the strongholds that were built over that church and the pastor and his family. And praise God, all curses, hexes, vexes, spells, charms, fetishes, witchcraft, and everything else, voodoo, hoodoo, and all the other garbage was broken off of that family and off of that church. And I'm happy to tell you they've had peace ever since. But the pastor was not equipped. He told me that he was fearful and he was not prepared to do to engage in battle against these demonic forces, and asked me would I come and help, and I did. And I'm glad that I did. It's another blessing. But the churches, for the most part, have turned their back on me, and God bless them. It's their problem.
Well, you know, even worse than that, and you know, these are the questions I probably don't want to ask, but because I kind of already know the answer. But the sad thing is that they've not turned their back on you so much as they've turned their back on what's written in the book that they claim that they believe in. If you look,
right.
And you know, and I've done this numerous times with people. I do a fair amount of counseling as well, and I like to point people towards Ephesians chapter 6, because that's really the place where you can come into your power if you can embrace the power behind what is in that word. And I'm constantly amazed that believers, people in churches, have no ability to take what's written in that book and understand that there was a power that was given to us, and it was given to us by Yeshua. Before he departed the earth, he told his disciples that we would have the power to tread over serpents and scorpions, which is an allegory for the demonic forces in the earth.
Right.
And here, you'll not preach, probably I will, because I don't think anything upsets me more than to see spiritually powerless believers and see how our world and our nation has been overtaken by the dark forces, and what you had in your...
Sure. It's blind leading the blind.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's amazing to me. I deal a lot in the realm of extraterrestrial abduction, and this is part of my life experience as well, that most of what goes on out there in the UFO community is disconnected from the reality of what is really going on. And I wanted to ask you this because you have a number of pictures on your website that I would characterize as UFOs. We talked earlier about the entities that appear in the photographs. And I have not talked to many people that are willing to go to the place where we can begin to tie together what occurred in your life and what occurs in the life of many people. I know there's multiple cross sections in terms of what I consider to be the abduction phenomena. So give me a little bit about what you think is going on, what the spiritual dynamics are, and anything that you could apply based on your experience.
Yeah, I think that Satan is a mimic. He's the original liar and a master mimic, and he mimics everything that God does. And he puts a vulgar, evil twist on it. So the sources from UFOs, and what I'm about to say, is very controversial, and I guess I would be labeled a heretic or whatever, but I would tell people, just study. The truth will set you free. Just study. And I have devoted the last several years to serious biblical studies and ancient history as well. And I found over 70 scriptures in the Bible that indicate that it's quite possible that Father Yahweh traveled and probably still travels in craft.
Ah, that's very interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah, and so I believe that he and his heavenly host do travel in these craft. However, I believe that Satan and his minions also travel in these vehicles because he mimics everything that Yahweh does. So also, we know that our governments do possess this technology as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they traverse the skies in these craft. So we have several different sources for these sightings and experiences, but at the end of the day, it all comes back to a spiritual thing, and there's no question in my mind that is what is happening. People are being just robbed in spirit, and their power is being taken from them.
Is there a process that you call deliverance, or is deliverance something that occurs on an individual basis, Bill?
Well, I believe that any person that is seeking, any person that is seeking a relationship with God can have that relationship, and they can be saved. If they just fall down and put Him first in their lives and confess everything, give it all to Him, and beg for forgiveness and repent everything and ask Him to come and send giant warrior angels in to get rid of this garbage, there is no doubt about it that miracles do happen. I've seen it. I'm a walking miracle, and I've seen it many, many times. And people, they just, it's all about faith. It really is. It's as simple as that. And I'm not trying to preach a sermon. I'm not trying to...
No. And I walked you into this.
Or whatever. But it's all about faith. And if people truly have faith, then they can be freed from this garbage.
You used a term early in the show, and I liked it very much, and you said about taking back our power.
Yes.
And part of what I've studied, and I'm very unconventional in what I would consider to be my faith base, which is still Christianity, but certainly nothing like what's institutionalized. And
right.
I've come to the sense that faith is something that has become diminished, that people don't understand that faith is in effect power, that we've taken faith and we've turned it into something that is weak and doesn't have any meaning anymore because it appears like wishing or hoping, but in fact faith itself to me looks a whole lot like power.
Yeah, absolutely. And if people could just realize that, they won't take the time. I'm sorry to say it like this, and I don't mean to criticize anybody. I love all people, but the truth is the truth, and there's no substitute for it. Unfortunately, now we have people that they want to go into church, and the focus in most churches now, unfortunately, is money and prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
And you could be rich like me if you buy my DVD and my book, mm-hmm. and you can do this and that, and the focus is on that. This is a delusion, and there's no teaching of spiritual warfare and how to arm yourself against the enemy. There's none of this stuff. They don't want people like me in their churches because I'm a poison pill. I upset the cart where the prosperity wagon, they don't want people coming in and upsetting people with things like this. They want everybody to come in, give them a little warm, fuzzy, feel-good thing, give me your money, and see you next Sunday. And that's pretty much what's going on, I'm sorry to say. And it's sad. It's tragic. Because people are sitting in these churches on antidepressants, and they're just as hopeless and helpless as the guy who's in the gutter, some of these people. Now, I know it's true, because I've been contacted by many people like that,
mm-hmm.
who are
mm-hmm.
members of church.
And part of what we do, certainly on the threshing floor side of this, because I consider that to be sort of an outside-the-box ministry for people that are refugees from the religious system, is to let them know, because many people out there are lonely in their walk, and they're weak in their walk, and they're searching for hope, and people like you and I that are willing to speak up, and we're told to speak the truth with love. Well, sometimes love doesn't feel very loving when you're getting it. We're admonished to discipline our children, and that's a good thing. And so some of the hard truths that you've spoken, and that I've kind of actually squeezed out of you a little bit in this conversation, have to do with speaking hard truths, because I know there are people that listen to these shows that contact me later and they tell me that they got a glimmer of hope because they heard something that gave them purpose again, that gave them direction and gave them a sense that they could take back their power. And, you know, that's really a very cool saying. I like that, of taking back our power and picking up our faith again.
Absolutely right. And for anyone out there who needs anything, please feel free to contact me at BillBean.net. You can email me directly from the site, and I answer every single message. You know, I'm away right now. I'm in New York, but I'll be back on Thursday. And anyone that sends messages, I will respond.
I have one follow-up question going back to the house for a minute. Have you ever been able to determine the history of that area or the history of the house itself to determine if there was something present in that particular region? Are we dealing, for instance, with what we would call a geophysical spirit, a principality, a power of some sort?
Yes, and again, I think that something led us, a dark force led us to that place. However, there was evil already present and manifest in the house and in the area, because 2 miles south from that house was a structure called the Wishing Rock, and according to research of history of the area, tribes of Indians used to gather and worship at that structure, saying it had supernatural powers. And so I believe that something happened there, and they did something to open a gateway or a vortex or a doorway that allowed these demonic powers to come through and greatly affect the entire area. I get many messages, still get messages from people in that area who are or have experienced supernatural paranormal phenomena and demonic problems. And it's regular. I get these messages regularly, and it's very real, and it's very troubling to this day for the people in that area.
Any advice that you would give to somebody who is experiencing any type of paranormal activity in their life?
Contact someone who has answers, and there are people out there. The best teachers are the ones who have lived it, who have been through it. And, you know, you don't have to be someone that has a wall full of degrees. Or
no, that's the last thing in the one. Once you have
right,
a degree,
reach out to the person that's been there and experienced it, and you want to contact those people to find out, you know, how did they get through it. And again, I welcome anyone to please contact me, and I have answers, and I can help people, and it's just it's not my answers, it's God's, and I praise Him and thank Him for it.
Anything else you want to add to the story or the conversation that we've had on this show today, Bill?
I just want to say once again, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it, brother, and God bless you and your family. And may 2012 be a great year for you. And thanks to everyone out there for listening. And I've just it's my life's mission to help as many people as I possibly can to lead these people to God before it's too late.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on and for the work that you've done. I've been aware of you in the background, and I guess this was the time when we were supposed to connect and put this information out for the public. You've been listening to Bill Bean, and you can find his website. It's BillBean.net. You can find the books there, Delivered and Dark Force, as well as just a slew of photographs and information. Anybody out there that is beset by this particular type of phenomena or experiencing something in your life where you're powerless and helpless, you can contact me through the websites, or you can contact Bill through his website, and there will be links up and lots of material to support the show that we just did. Bill, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, brother. God bless you.
This has been The Threshing Floor and Off Planet Radio, a kind of a joint show, because I felt that this was a show that was both about paranormal and spirituality. And we'll wrap it up by saying, as we always do, the truth is out there. It's inside you. Look for it. We'll be back with another show very soon.